Welcome to the January 12th service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. Our service today is led by our minister, Reverend Pam Phillips, and the title of her sermon is Uncovering Integrity. The podcast begins with a reading read by Worship Associate David Lally.
Today's reading is by Rachel Naomi Remen, author of Kitchen Table Wisdom. Wholeness is never lost, it is only forgotten. Integrity rarely means that we need to add something to ourselves. It is more an undoing than a doing, a freeing of ourselves from beliefs we have about who we are in ways we have been persuaded to fix ourselves to know who we genuinely are. Even after many years of seeing, thinking, in living one way, we are able to reach past all that to claim our integrity and live in a way we have never expected to live. Being with people at such times is like watching them pat their pockets, trying to remember where they have put their soul. Often in reclaiming the freedom of who we are, we remember some basic human quality, an unsuspected capacity for love or compassion, or some other part of our common birthright as human beings. What we find is almost always a surprise, but it is also familiar, like something we have put in the back of a drawer long ago. Once we see it, we know it is our own.
I love the two images in our reading today, of someone patting their pockets, trying to remember where they put their soul. Can you see it? Or of finding something in the back of the drawer that was put away so long ago you've forgotten about it, but you know it. It is familiar. I love the idea that our wholeness is never lost, just forgotten. There's something really comforting in these images because it reassures us that we can always retrieve our wholeness. Our sense of integrity. Now, we most often think of integrity the way I explained it to the children last week, doing the right thing even when no one is watching. But we know from the story last week that there is always someone watching ourselves. We also talked about integrity as living up to and into our values. And we set an intention for the year ahead by choosing a value we most wanted to live into and picking up a touchstone to be a reminder. I'm curious whether that was useful to anyone this week. Yeah? Did anybody hold that stone in their hand and go, oh yes, this is what I want to live up to? I see some, we have stones in. Now, if you were not here last week, there's a bowl of stones in the center table. And I invite you after the service or during some music even to go find a stone and let that be your touchstone for who you want to be and how you want to live in the world this year. And as we said, it's not etched in stone. You can change the value midway through the year if you want. Or you can pick up more than one. Today I want to explore another way of thinking about integrity, and it always reminds me of my time as a middle school teacher because it has to do with math. Integrity comes from the same root as the word integer. Do you remember your middle school math? What is an integer? It is a whole number. It isn't divided into fractions. So if we want to be people of integrity, we will strive for wholeness, acknowledging, accepting, and celebrating all of who we are. Which shouldn't be that hard, should it? And yet, haven't we all experienced what it feels like to be a fraction instead of a whole person? Am I the only person? I think of the times when I feel scattered, when the demands of life have my attention divided in so many places that I can't seem to do any one of them justice. Or the times when one part of my life seems to take over and I leave the rest unattended. It's hard to feel whole when our lives are out of balance. I think what Dr. Remen, though, is talking about is less about the many different roles we play in the world and more about the qualities within us that make us who we are. As we live our lives, though, we get messages about who we should or shouldn't be that interfere with our knowing, let alone expressing ourselves fully. And so, as Remen puts it, we must free ourselves from beliefs we have about who we are and ways we have been persuaded to fix ourselves. I think last week we talked about the apparent values that we as Americans have about being thin and famous and rich. What are the other things?
Entertained.
We are bombarded with messages about fixing ourselves, aren't we? I ran across a message the other day on social media that helped me understand what this might look like for some people. It clearly resonated with a lot of people. It was retweeted 55,000 times. Some of you may have seen it. Alexander Leon. Does that name ring a bell for anyone? It might. His Twitter profile describes him as a writer and activist for LGBT plus rights, anti-racism, and mental health. He tweeted, "Queer people don't grow up as ourselves. We grow up playing a version of ourselves that sacrifices authenticity to minimize humiliation and prejudice. The massive task of our adult lives is to unpick which parts of ourselves are truly us and which parts we've created to protect us." This sounds just like Remen to me. As adults, we have to pick through to find out who we really are and who we've taken on, those traits we've taken on to protect ourselves. As a straight, cisgendered person, it is hard for me to imagine how difficult it would be to grow up in a culture that regularly sends messages to LGBTQ plus folks that they're not okay, who are subject to humiliation and prejudice for simply being who they are. I can't and I will not claim that as my own experience. But perhaps to a lesser extent, many, if not most of us, do grow up playing a version of ourselves that we think will help us either fit in or get along in the world better. Does that resonate for any of you? We start getting messages fairly early in our lives about who we should or shouldn't be, in subtle and not so subtle ways. Now, I had a really hard time thinking up a story to tell the children this morning. Did you notice? Sometimes we get inspiration at the last moment. Thank you, Jared, for playing the hokey pokey for us. Because I'm guessing and I'm hoping that our children haven't already been getting those messages. I didn't want to plant a seed that they weren't okay in any way. Some of you may remember a reading we did last fall. Jane Rzepka, I think that's how you say it, she wrote, "Healthy little kids know their hot stuff. Little kids strut. Little kids say what they think. When you tell Jose he looks terrific in his shoes, he'll say, I know. I had several people come up to me after that service and say, I've been saying that to myself all the time. I know. Little kids haven't yet got the message that we should be modest. We should be humble. We shouldn't be conceited. Yes. This is our form of amen. You keep punctuating this sermon, all right, Alice? I'm guessing and hoping that our beautiful children today aren't getting some of the messages we got as children. You know them. Big boys don't cry. Did you hear it? Or girls play with Barbie dolls, not with Tonka trucks. I got a Tonka truck when I was 6. But even with the most enlightened parenting, as soon as we hit kindergarten or first grade, we get bombarded with other messages from teachers about what's acceptable and from our peers about what's cool, or however you say that today. I'm sure I'm not cool enough to know. One of the picture books I considered for the Time for All Ages was about a little girl who liked lima beans, but wouldn't eat them because her friends hated them. It was a great story, but it really rested on the pictures because she turned all different colors of stripes. And then when she got to school, every time one of the kids would say something, she would turn that color, or, you know, she was like a Stars and Stripes when they did the Pledge of Allegiance. And it was like her body was doing what we do with peer pressure. She became what they said aloud. It was a great story, and if I'd had a television screen behind me, you all could have seen it. Yes. Another story was about a girl who was teased for eating spaghetti on a hot dog bun, also with great pictures. But foregoing favorite food is one thing. But we also get messages about how we should feel and what we should think. When we got hurt, what did the adults say to us? Walk it off? Oh, it's not that bad. Yeah. You're okay. It's okay. When you were frightened, what did they say? What's that? Go back to sleep. There's nothing to be afraid of. When we were upset and tearful, don't you cry, or I'll give you something to cry about. What was that about? When we were angry, go to your room. Yeah? Time out. Yeah. Many of us got the message that some emotions were unacceptable and that we shouldn't express them or even admit to having them. Some of us still get those messages. Does anyone here have a hard time with anger? I've inherited my mom's way of dealing with anger. I know this probably will sound funny to you, but she used to stuff it and stuff it and stuff it. And then the one last little thing, and it would all come out. Yeah? That's not healthy. That's not whole. But not all of those messages are negative ones. Remen points out that judgment does not only take the form of criticism. Approval is also a form of judgment. When we approve of people, we sit in judgment of them as surely as when we criticize them. Positive judgment hurts less acutely than criticism, but it is judgment all the same, and we are harmed by it in far more subtle ways. Like all judgment, approval encourages constant striving. It makes us uncertain of who we are and of our true value. That might seem counterintuitive, that positive judgment can hurt, but it can really set us up. Think about a little girl who is praised for being pretty. It feels good at the time, but she might grow up thinking that she has to be beautiful to be acceptable. And what about when she loses her looks as she gets older? She loses her identity. The same can be true for any number of positive judgments. Once we receive approval from family, from teachers, from peers, that becomes a part of who we are, whether it is authentic to us or not. Think about the identity you were given as a child, the positive identity. Were you the athlete, the artist, the comedian, the peacemaker, the scholar, the risk taker? Any number of identities. And once you have that identity, you continue to have it no matter who or what you become, once you're out of your family and on your own. That becomes who you are, even if you have interests or abilities in other areas. And you may measure your own worth and success by that standard. Is anyone carrying around that childhood label? Any of you successfully gotten rid of it? And then you go home, and they remind you all over again. Later in life, we come into new situations where we have to figure out how best to fit in. We take time to get the lay of the land, to see what the community values are, and adjust ourselves so that we can fit in, hopefully in line with our values, but sometimes making compromises. Most often, I'm guessing it happens when we get new jobs, move to a new school, neighborhood, or town, marry into new families, or even join a religious community. I was telling David about what it was like for me when I went to graduate school. College at University of Oregon, I was in the Honors College, I was one of the smart ones. Then when I went to Chapel Hill, I was with all the other smart ones from all the other colleges. And there was one guy who went to University of Michigan. And there's a critic there named Joseph Blotner. I don't know if any English teachers in the room, but whenever he could, Alan would say, "Well, Blotner says..." We called it pulling a Rubinoff, because that was his last name. But he had to commit to being this person, you know, who is smarter than, knew more than the rest of us. Dr. Ruman writes, "We surrender our wholeness for a variety of reasons. Among the most compelling are our ideas of what being a good person is all about. Sometimes it is not the approval of other people, but the approval of a spiritual school or teacher which dictates which parts of ourselves we keep and which we hide. Our true self gets whittled down and measured against some acquired standard of social and spiritual acceptability." At first glance, the thought that we surrender our wholeness because of our ideas of what being a good person is all about didn't make sense to me. We all want to be good people, right? But we can have really restrictive ideas of what good means. Does it mean always putting other people's needs ahead of your own? Does it mean always saying yes when we're asked to do something, even if it doesn't fit? One of the most liberating things I ever read was in my former minister, Eric Walker Wickstrom's book, Serving with Grace, Lay Leadership as a Spiritual Practice. The chapter is titled, No is as Sacred as Yes. Amen. And in it, he encourages people to be reflective and intentional in deciding how they want to be involved in congregational activities. To do what interests us and what we're good at or what we want to be good at, rather than agreeing to do something just because someone needs to do it. I think of the woman who agreed to be secretary of the board when I was president. She resigned after the third meeting. It was kind of odd. We had the meeting, and she took notes, and at the end of the meeting, she handed me a typewritten letter of resignation. I was really irritated with her because she knew she was going to resign before the meeting started. But she realized she was a doer. And what fed her soul was serving snacks after the service and putting together the potluck and sitting in a board meeting and talking and talking and talking was driving her to distraction. And if she were to have stayed in that role, the resentment would have built up and up and up. So it was a pain to replace her on the board, but I admire her ability to acknowledge and accept who she was and what fed her soul. And so if I've asked you to do something, I think many of you have heard me say those words. No is as sacred as yes. Because being whole means saying yes when it feeds your soul, not just because you have to. Eric once said that should is not a reason to do anything. I also wonder if there are ways that we here at UUC give approval that dictates which parts of ourselves we keep and which we hide. I am loving that. Hi. This has been on my mind lately, ever since we talked about it in the Transgender Inclusion in Congregations workshop. We talked about the implicit values we hold as Unitarian Universalists. There was an image of an iceberg, and on the parts above the water were the things that you see that we do. We light a chalice. Sometimes it takes us a little while to get the candle lit. We sing Spirit of Life. We say prayers. We do social justice. The things that we do are the top of the iceberg. But below water are those values and norms that support it. Things that we don't necessarily acknowledge, but that send messages all the same. Values and norms such as perfectionism, intellectualism and college degrees, financial security, emphasis on niceness, conflict avoidance, individualism. When we get those messages, we learn to hide the ways in which we don't measure up. There was, I think I've told you about this woman before. There was a woman at the church in Charlottesville who was magnificent. She was on the membership committee, and she was active and involved and committed, and she didn't have a college degree. And she didn't want anyone to know that. She felt less than. I've had conversations with people who feel like they cannot bring all of themselves here. We do make judgments and send messages, whether we mean to or not. While we aspire to radical hospitality, we can sometimes make folks feel unwelcome. I think about how much we value children. We invest in our religious education program with our time and our money. But sometimes parents are made to feel uncomfortable when their children are not perfectly quiet and well-behaved in a service. Which is why I'm so glad you all are here today. Sometimes we don't welcome the older children enough by giving them things that they can do. And we aspire to welcome all LGBTQ folks, but I received an email last fall from someone who said that they sat next to a trans couple and noticed that people were not very friendly toward them. A few said hello, but others looked disgusted. Ouch. I'm not sure exactly what they meant, but the impression was strong enough that they wrote to me about their concern. Sometimes we don't even know when we're sending messages to others. Now, I don't say this to shame anyone, but to acknowledge that our aspirations sometimes fall short as individuals and as a community. And that is a part of our wholeness. As we consider what it means to be people of integrity, let's take the time to consider how we can send messages that affirm our own and others' whole selves. I have gotten into the practice of not sending very good messages to myself. Oh, that was so stupid. I can't believe I did that. I'm such an idiot. Fortunately, I have a husband who will say to me over and over again, "Be careful what you say to yourself. You might start to believe it." So I'm getting better. So if you ever hear me say, "Oh, that was so stupid," call me on it. Call each other on it. Our first principle is we all have inherent worth and dignity. It is not we are all perfect. So let's send messages that affirm our own and each other's whole selves, including our perfect imperfections. With that in mind, let's return to the words of our meditation. Let us have the courage to sit in the unknowing, to look for the answers, even if they are to sit with our own questions, to be willing to be authentic with ourselves, to be ready to bring our face to the world. Let us be willing to know others by welcoming their genuine features, by welcoming them into the world, by appreciating the beauty that comes from seeing wholeness and truth. I invite you to take the hand or touch the shoulder or elbow of someone near you. to feel the connection between and among us all. Let us be a community where we can bring our whole selves, where we can accept, acknowledge, and celebrate all of who we are. And let us take our whole selves out into the world because it needs us, our wholeness, and our love. Amen, and blessed be.